night.
Oh yeah, I told you about this. Why the poop face? There was also another one, another expression. Don't give me that dirty diaper look.
I'm going to remember.
Have you so close to me.
Yeah, I can say the same. So this is actually our first live podcast.
Yeah.
When we are not separated by distance,
mm-hmm.
and by the internet, when we are sitting next to each other. That's very weird. I haven't seen you for like 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great that I finally have this opportunity to come to Naberezhny Chelny.
So
though it was a very, very crazy adventure.
Yeah, tell us about your trip. How long has it been? Like almost a week?
Yeah, but 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the story is the following. My roommate has decided to get back to Naberezhny Chelny by car. You know, you can't leave a car in another city if you want to sell it. You first have to take the tags of it, and
mm-hmm.
that's kind of, you know, complicated. So that's why we decided to go by car, which was not in a very good condition. So two dogs, a bad car, which had to be repaired, but wasn't repaired, and just two of us. I mean, the weather was very good, but we were very slow. We spent 4 nights in motels, which was actually very interesting, because you don't know what these people are like. I mean,
mm-hmm.
the people from big roads.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite interesting. So yeah, and finally I'm here in my mom's and dad's home, enjoying the quiet of Naberezhny Chelny.
She goes when and where the nature calls her. Her last name is Adventure. She's our very own daredevil. There was an old and unreliable car. There was a road from St. Petersburg to Chelny. Let's freaking do it! Thank God she's with us now. Let's give a round of applause to brave and beautiful Ася!
Wow. That's great.
And again with us today is our second presenter of this most wonderful of all podcasts, the girl who didn't do much this weekend except for reading a little bit, Landish.
That's what my favorite. You still haven't got this applause thing.
No, I always forget about it.
Yeah,
I can find it.
I'm sure it's very easy to find.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right.
For 40 years, a Russian family was cut off from all human contact, unaware of World War II. In 1978, a party of geologists found a hut deep in taiga near the headwaters of the Abakan River in the Sayan Mountains of southern Siberia, 200 miles away from the nearest settlement. There lived a family of five, Karp Likov, his wife, a son, and two daughters. They rejected everything that they were offered, jam, tea, bread, and muttered, "We're not allowed that." When one of the geologists asked, "Have you ever eaten bread?" the old man answered, "I have, but they haven't. They have never seen it." The daughter spoke a language distorted by a lifetime of isolation. He was an old believer, a member of the fundamentalist Russian Orthodox sect. All that his children knew of the outside world, they learned entirely from their parents' stories. They made everything themselves. They hunted. What amazed him most of all, one of the geologists recorded, was a transparent cellophane package. "It is glass, but it crumbles," they said. All members of the family died except for one of the daughter. Yes.
Why did they die?
I think that two children, son and daughter, they died of malnutrition or something, diseases that came from malnutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Well, parents died from old age, and there's only one.
So
the
geologist who found them didn't take them with them.
They refused to go with them. She was left alone, so
mm-hmm.
she got a choice to go to another city. Yeah,
so
to live somewhere.
She decided to live alone.
She decided to stay there, so she buried her parents,
brother
and sister. She buried them as well in somewhere in the mountains, and she stayed there alone. She refused to go anywhere.
I just wonder what causes such kind of isolation. I mean, would you be able to live
deserted
somewhere in taiga, or maybe okay, let's choose a warmer climate somewhere
mm-hmm.
on an island.
Just by yourself.
Just by yourself. Just you, probably.
I don't think so, because first of all, I think that comes from the religion. Yeah, they believed in it. They had some kind of
but
a faith.
What is this old old Christianity about?
I don't know how they are different from others, but I know that they have always been persecuted by the government. And I think that they moved to taiga because they were persecuted by Bolsheviki.
Mm-hmm.
But as for their children, I think that it comes from upbringing. They just took this faith. Mm-hmm. And they decided to live by those rules. I would never be able to live in that kind of isolation.
I'm totally for some kind of principles. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do respect people who have principles. But when these people are too different, mm-hmm. then I...
It reminds me of this, when they make children do things that crazy, yes? For example, raw eaters. The people who eat...
Raw eaters?
Yes,
oh,
something
people
different.
People who decide to eat... vegetables and fruit only.
Yes, that is a very popular thing right now.
I even know one guy, I guess he's a Russian immigrant,
mm-hmm.
he lives in Italy. He's a famous blogger, his nickname is Izum. Mm. I guess he's in his 30s,
mm-hmm.
getting on to 33 maybe. He's married and he's been a raw eater for like 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And his child, a 2-year-old toddler, is a raw eater from birth.
Mm-hmm.
So
what do doctors say about that?
Well, the child is quite healthy, but I guess just the mere absence of choice.
Mm-hmm.
What I don't like is just,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I believe every person should have a choice. The same concerns religion. When you were baptized at the age of 1, you probably understood nothing. I mean,
mm-hmm.
surely you understood nothing,
mm-hmm.
about this religion, yeah? So I guess such decisions are to be made when you are mature, when
mm-hmm.
you already know something about life. But
so
I also see some advantages in such kind of,
yeah, of
isolation.
Course.
I mean, they were so close to nature,
mm-hmm.
they...
Probably. Have you ever wanted to have such kind of isolated life?
Oh, I've
somewhere.
Always wanted to have such kind of isolation.
I always wanted to move somewhere in China, you know, on the mountains with the Buddhists. That was
yeah.
always been
that
my
is,
dream.
That's interesting. I think my dream, this is probably my extreme dream, is to cut off the internet connection,
mm-hmm.
and go somewhere, not necessarily to China, that... even maybe my dacha,
mm-hmm.
and live there for like 3 months, just me and my dog, and
mm-hmm.
Enjoy the nature and see the pleasures of life, which you normally ignore. In this frantic pace of life, we tend to forget about small
mm-hmm.
pleasures.
Once I read a story about this woman who lived in St. Petersburg and she moved to Finland. She bought a house there, somewhere in the middle of nowhere. It was far from the next village, and she rebuilt it.
Mm-hmm.
And she was pregnant during that time, and she was alone, so she just made a baby herself.
Wow.
Yeah, so she decided, she was a very
the
independent woman.
Mary. how's that called?
Virgin Mary.
Virgin Mary,
like
yeah.
Probably. She started to make bread and to sell it to the local restaurants,
mm.
and she started to make money out of it. And it was such an interesting life, you know, this village life. When you are completely alone, there's no one around.
It's interesting. Apparently
mm-hmm.
it's interesting. But again, I am always cautious with extremes.
Mm-hmm.
My roommate actually is a huge fan of Tarsunov. It's a guy who gives lectures in Russia
mm.
about how you should live. Believe
like
in
a
God.
Motivation speaker?
I wouldn't call him a motivation speaker. I would call him a new Jesus or something like
okay.
that. I mean, I don't really understand that. But anyway, this guy has... village in the outskirts of Krasnodar.
Mm-hmm.
They are a very isolated community.
Mm-hmm.
They just, you know, make bread by themselves, have their own cows, and
mm-hmm.
enjoy their life and preach and
mm-hmm.
I don't know. But I think people are not that bad to get completely isolated
mm-hmm.
from the rest of the people.
I like the small cities. I think that I want to live. I don't want to stay all my life here in Nabrzeżne, but where I want to live. This place has to
some
be
kind
a
of
small.
French rural area.
Yes,
that's
that
where
perfect.
I imagine you.
That would be perfect. Because
it's just a small house, you
yes.
know. Small wooden house, very warm.
Close to some. I need some sea, I need some water around me.
But of course, you have a car, so if you want to go to a big city, then you always
mm-hmm.
have this opportunity. I mean, that's what they do everywhere right
mm-hmm.
now. I mean, if you have the money, you wouldn't choose living in a big city.
I'm reading right now Guillermo del Toro. He's one of my favorite directors. He wrote 3 books about vampires, detailing the existence of vampires. Why?
I already told you, I prefer zombies.
we do, yeah, I know. He wrote about mole people, More people are homeless people living under large cities in abandoned subway, railroad, flood and sewage tunnels and heating shafts. These people are also sometimes referred to as tunnel people or tunnel dwellers. Jennifer Toth's 1993 book, The Mole People, Life in the Tunnels Beneath New York City, shows them as an ordered society living literally under people's feet, reminiscent of the Morlocks of the science fiction writer Wells, which is not true, as they say, because it is believed to be a loose-knit community of secretive and hard-luck individuals. Which actually fascinated me. Some people could live under your feet.
I still don't believe that. I mean, sorry.
No, there are,
I know
there
that it's a proven fact, but I mean, why would people choose living without communicating with the world?
It is said that, for example, most of them have some kind of mental diseases, so that when they are out, when they are with other people,
they can't find themselves.
They can't even go to shelters for homeless people, because then they are again different from everyone. Mm-hmm. So they are preferred to be separated from the outside world and
but
to
again,
live together.
When, I mean, how easy is it to find someone like you? What do you think about homeless people?
I do help them. I do, for example, we have in our Tatar culture that thing which is called sadaka. For example, if it is the date when your loved one died, you go to a person who is less fortunate than you are and you give a bit of money maybe,
or you give food,
yeah, so that they can pray for the soul of that person.
Yeah.
Or if you need some luck. My mother, for example, she's a bit crazy. I worry about her sometimes. Because I think
I've heard about the cat thing. So.
Yes. I think that is a sign of an old age. Because she is really crazy about cats. We have this woman in our apartment house who lives with her cats. And there are probably 20 or 30 of those cats who live with her. And I think that my mother is probably moving
the
in that kind of direction. Yes. Once I even sat with her and said, Mom, I worry about you.
I mean, I love cats.
Yes.
But can you please take that one from the ceiling?
Summertime is the hardest part. Because every day I usually take 3 or 4 bottles.
I usually take 3 or 4 cats out of the house.
No. I usually take 3 or 4 bottles of water at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and we have different spots in our district. So there are small cups that are made from from plastic bottles, and it takes you like 20 minutes to go through all of them and pour in some water, and you have to do it every day.
So is that what your mother tells you to do, or is that your own initiative?
It's not my own initiative, so it was involuntarily, so she made me. And after that, yes, you kind of understand it, because it's the hottest time of the year, so of course cats may find somewhere something to eat, but it's very hard to find water anywhere, and that's why I do this.
This is great. This is great. But what about people? Do you help homeless people? Do you ever give money to beggars?
Yes, I do. I sometimes do. But for example, I remember that once you posted a story about some kind of an old lady that you gave your money to in the subway. We have this supermarket right in front of our house. And there was a woman, I remember that I was entering it, and there was a woman in a wheelchair, and a man standing in front of her, and he was instructing her how to beg for money. So he was telling, yeah,
this is what I don't understand. I still can't ignore such people, especially if they are the old or the sick. My heart is breaking. I just give the money. But I think this is so unfair when people make money out of somebody's compassion, out of somebody's big heart. This is something completely outrageous, in my opinion. And I don't understand that. I remember when I was in high school and I was thinking of entering Kazan State University. So I was living in Kazan for like 2 months, preparing for the exams. And then I was walking on Baumana Street, and I saw this very, very old lady, probably like, I don't know, at least 100 years old. She was very old, like seriously very old, very thin, like, you know, like African ones, very thin, just skin and bones, and very old. And I gave her all the money I had. I mean, and that was not, that was quite a lot of money. Everything my mom gave me, I gave everything to her, and I of course I felt so good after that. I didn't have any money even for the bus, but I was so happy. I felt that I did something really worthy in my life. But can you imagine how I felt the next following day when I was on the Bauna Street again, going to university, and I saw that old lady sitting in a cafe. That was early morning. She was sitting in a cafe, drinking, and the cafe was, I mean, quite expensive, you would say, drinking an espresso and smoking a very thick cigar. Not a cigarette, cigar. She was smoking cigar and drinking a cup of coffee. And I was like, oh my God. So that was an epiphany for me.
In St. Petersburg, I usually give money to the musicians.
Well, because they actually, they did not beg. They work for this money. This is a bit
I remember that I loved one a person who played the accordion. Have you seen this the video about a famous violinist who he was fantastic. People paid like thousands of dollars to get into his concerts, and there was a study
like a street musician.
Or? No. He's just a regular musician,
okay.
Very famous, and so there was a study by Washington Post, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
So he stood in the subway, in Washington subway, just to see if people actually noticed the music, and he stood there for like maybe an hour and a half.
So nobody noticed.
Only one girl noticed. So she approached him and asked an autograph, and there were only a few people who gave some money. Most of them are just rushed by.
I've listened recently a German podcast about this called Straßenkünstler.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some people interviewed, some street musicians interviewed, and they said that this is actually their personal choice.
Mm.
They like this interaction with people, they like this freedom they have. So they said that they are lucky with their...
Do they earn quite a lot of money?
They
don't
earn a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
but they earn enough to sleep,
mm-hmm.
To travel, to get some food. It's not that they are millionaires, but
mm-hmm.
Apparently they are not beggars. They have
mm-hmm.
some money, so... But this is some kind of a job. They work for it.
When I went to Boston, I found that this is a very musical city because there were musicians everywhere. Everywhere on the streets. The same goes with France, because in France musicians are also everywhere. And in St. Petersburg, maybe you do find some...
They were like drug addicted, all of them.
Yeah,
they look very suspicious. You would
but you
say.
Do find them.
Yeah.
And it's very nice when the city is musical, when there are street musicians.
Could you work as a street artist? I know that you did back in the United States, but right now, could you make money actually working on the streets? Like
I think that you have to have a lot of courage to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really like to interact with people. I like to be all by myself. Oh, I have to have someone, like a guard with
or
me.
Or like a manager, like me. I would
yes.
be just like attracting people. Come on!
You're like a pimp.
Exactly, and you would be sitting there somewhere in the bushes. And I'd be attracting people, I'd be advertising your art.
I have to try it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's in Petersburg.
It's in Petersburg. I guess we can do that. We can try that.
Today we're talking about food.
Food
delicious.
I love.
National fast food chains calls.
Okay,
who doesn't like food? You just ate. How many chocolates you ate?
Don't tell.
All right. Okay. National fast food chains, Carl's Jr. and Hardee's, launched the new charboiled Atlantic codfish sandwich. With a little help from a Sports Illustrated swimsuit model, Nina Agdal, in a bikini, eats a sandwich on a tropical beach.
Wow.
A model eating a sandwich.
I think it's very thought-provoking.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, Faina Raniewska once said, if you want to lose weight... eat in front of the mirror. I guess it's very similar when you see a model eating a sandwich. You simply don't believe it. You
mm-hmm.
think this is fake.
Mm-hmm.
A model doesn't eat sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
A model eats water. And that's it. So
I think that it is aimed mostly for men, I guess.
As
because,
my friend...
Because there is food... And there is a woman.
I don't think that they are compatible. That's
mm-hmm.
the point. As my friend once said, when we were in a restaurant, she saw a newly wed couple.
Mm-hmm.
They were eating some sandwiches, some burgers. And you know, I mean, just I have this very clear vision in my head how you eat a sandwich. I mean, all your mouth is in a ketchup. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, you're not very pretty when you're eating a big sandwich, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the girl seemed to be very much okay with that. So she was sitting opposite her husband or her boyfriend, eating this huge sandwich and feeling okay. And my friend Elena said, well, this is what I call love. when you are not shy, when you are not confused of doing something seemingly natural, but at the same time a bit disgusting in front of your partner, this is what I call love.
Bad news for late night eaters. When you eat could matter as well as what you eat if you are trying to shed pounds, says Los Angeles Times. A study in Spain followed 420 men and women on a diet for 20 weeks. They were grouped into early eaters, those who ate their main meal before 3 p.m., and late eaters, those who had it after. It turned out that the late eaters lost less weight, 17 pounds, and at a slower rate than the early eaters, who lost almost 22 pounds. So the timing of food intake itself may have a significant role in weight regulation.
I totally agree with that.
Mm-hmm. So when do you usually eat?
Last time? In a day?
Yeah. When did you eat?
I
saw when you ate last time, so
I have this ups and downs. I have this ups and downs in my eating habits. When I try to control my weight, I try to eat to consume less, and I try not to eat after 6 p.m. These periods don't last long, unfortunately, and after a while I decide, okay, today was a hard day. I will probably treat myself with with a late dinner. In my downs periods, I can eat even at midnight. I love food. It's not that I'm a heavy eater. It's not that I eat all the time, but I just like good food. I enjoy the process. I like the feeling after. So
you can feel sad before you eat and after you eat, but you can never be sad during the process of eating.
Especially when you're hungry. I have this theory, you know, my dog is on dog food right now because I presume she's allergic to some regular food because it's very rich in protein. You have to give her only small portions twice a day, like really small portions, like a handful, you know, very, very little. But my dog seems to be hungry. I mean, she gets enough protein, she gets enough vitamins, enough calories. But her eyes are still hungry because she just ate and she didn't notice that she has just eaten something. And she's still hungry. She wants more simply because she didn't get this satisfaction out of food. And I guess this is probably what people sometimes experience when you are on a diet. You have gotten enough calories, you don't need more, but you didn't get this satisfaction. It was not tasty, it was not what you expected, and you are still hungry, you want more.
In Stephen King, he has this book, Eat. There was a character of a boy who was really fat, but he was very intelligent. So he decided to lose weight. He understood that you can have the quantity, but you can change the quality. So, for example, you can eat as much greens as you want.
Yeah.
And it will be a lot. So you can eat all day, but you're not going to gain any weight because of it. So you can eat a lot of food, but the food has to be appropriate. So it can be fruits, vegetables.
It can, but for example, as for me, I'm not a fan of fruits and vegetables, except tomatoes. I love tomatoes. I can eat a lot of tomatoes, but and ketchup and all these things that you can make from tomatoes. But apart from tomatoes, I'm not a fan of apples. I can eat one apple a day, maximum. I'm not a fan of bananas. I'm not a fan of cucumbers. So for me, just being on this raw diet is completely, but of course that's probably maybe my prejudice, maybe I just need to change it, and after some time I will get used to that probably. But right now I've tried several times and I didn't feel well, like literally I felt sick. It's not that I was hungry, I wasn't hungry. I mean, when you consume a lot of greens, you can't be hungry, your stomach is full, but I just didn't feel well. I felt sick. I think moderation is the key in everything. This is my strategy, and that concerns everything in my life. You can drink alcohol, you can eat everything, you can do whatever you want, but there's always a certain limit which you shouldn't forget about. Dear listeners, we would like to officially announce the end of our Finish Me Story competition. Landish and I have read the stories of our participants during this all morning.
All morning.
We were reading it all morning, yeah. We were really excited and we were really fascinated with the plots and with the characters. It was so amazing. We didn't really expect that. So thank you very, very much for all those of you who have taken part in our first story competition. I think we are going to make it a tradition, because as I already said, I would like our website to be a place where people can develop their language skills, where people can show some creativity, show some imagination, and not just a stupid place where you can like some posts and gather a lot of likes. This is not about us. So that's why we are very thankful, and we are going to announce the results of our competition in our website.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that will be today or maybe tomorrow. Yeah. And we have decided that every participant deserves a prize, because all projects were so fantastic that we just couldn't do it otherwise.
Yeah. And you will be able to read all the entries that were received on our website as well. It's www.lingvistov.ru.
Yes, and by the way, if you are still thinking about learning English on Skype, you can try it with us. The first trial lesson is absolutely free. We can show you how it works, what it is all about, and I guess this is it. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So our next podcast episode is going to be from Yekaterinburg.
No, it's still from here.
Oh, it's okay.
Next book one.
Yes,
yeah.
So it's going to be.
So the next one, hopefully, will be an interview with the winner.
Yeah, with the winner of our story competition, hopefully.
Hopefully, yes.
If he decides to agree. Yeah. Thank you, and stay tuned. We love you.
Yeah,
we love you. Bye.
Bye.